The Code of the Haruspex. The Haruspex was a fortune teller or oracle during the Roman era, and like those who followed in the path of this oracle, the Haruspex had a fine understanding of how to influence and persuade others purely through words. This is the reason we will be focusing on some strategies commonly used by oracles and psychics in this part of the book. The goal is not to deceive people or feed them wrong information about the future, but rather to extract the expert strategies used by oracles so you can apply the same strategies when interacting with your subjects. There is nothing wrong about stepping out of the formal bounds of covert hypnosis to integrate creative strategies from other sources. If you are ready to add another potent set of techniques to your growing arsenal of covert hypnosis strategies, then let us begin. One of the key characteristics of famous psychics and oracles is their ability to convince people that what they are saying should be believed and what they are saying will happen in the future. In hypnosis, practitioners rely primarily on visualization that occurs after the trance state has already set in. A hypnotist might say something like, "When I begin counting backwards from 5, you will begin feeling light and sleepy." The problem with this classical approach is that when you are interacting with different people in the real world, you don't have the luxury of having a hypnotist's office or couch. You might not even have the luxury of having a quiet place during a conversation. You might be in a bar talking to someone that you find attractive, or you might be standing near the water dispenser in your office, talking to your boss who seems to be bent on replacing you. Whatever your situation might be, one thing is certain. Unless you are a professional hypnotherapist, you do not have all the amenities available during a formal hypnosis session. And so you have to adapt to your circumstance to ensure that you will still be an effective hypnotist, even if you are just having a normal conversation with your hypnotic subject. All right, so let's talk about the first Haruspex technique, which will allow you to create vivid expectations in the subject's mind to the extent that he will believe in every little detail that you will relay to him. This technique has 3 distinct phases. The first phase is to craft a specific expectation in the subject's mind. The second phase is to provide the materials needed to make the expectation bloom in the subject's imagination. The third phase is to provide proof that the expectation has already manifested in physical reality, right then and there, in front of the subject's very eyes. Let's talk about the 3 phases and how you can employ them when you want someone to absolutely believe what you are saying, 100%. The first phase is to create the expectation that you want your subject to believe in. This expectation can be very general, or it can also be a very specific expectation. The expectation can be as grand or as plain as can be. As long as the expectation supports your goal as a covert hypnotist, it can be used. Now, it is not enough for you to say that something will happen just because you said so. For example, if you want your subject to become attracted to you, you cannot just say, "When you look into my eyes, you will find me extremely handsome and sexy." While this might sound like a shortcut of sorts, it will not work because the subject does not have an adequate amount of information and therefore he will have no reason to trust you or even believe in what you are saying. Remember, conversational hypnosis is not magic. It is based on the science and art of self-hypnosis, and if you don't apply the foundational techniques of hypnosis, you will not succeed, even if we are applying linguistic strategies from other sources. Because the human mind will only yield to very specific forms of information and stimuli. How can you create an effective expectation in your subject's mind? The first thing you have to do is to establish rapport with your subject. Rapport is essentially just harmony between 2 or more people. Ideally, your subject should see you as a pack leader. A pack leader is a person who appears to know what he is doing and is willing to protect the interest of the people that look up to him. Essentially, a pack leader is someone who will not reduce or deplete his subject's resources, for example, financial resources. Once you have shown that you are not out to deplete your subject's resources, you can begin creating an expectation by sharing a narrative or story. Your story should center solely on the following details. What event will take place? Why it will take place? Evidence that the event will take place. A good story should capture your subject's imagination so that he becomes hungry for more information. How do you capture someone's imagination and curiosity through a story? Easy. Relate the most interesting parts of your story and leave out specific details. That way, your subject will still be able to follow your story, but he won't have all of the details. Once your subject is firmly hooked by your story, it is time to proceed to the second phase, which is to expand the details of your story so that your subject's trance will deepen. Now, this is a very tricky part of the technique, because if you commit a misstep, the impact of your description will be dampened greatly. But don't worry, the key to succeeding with this type of interaction is to stick to the primary theme and to just be consistent with your words. You can add and modify a few elements, but your line of reasoning should be the same from start to finish. The final phase is to act as if the expectation has already taken place in physical reality. It doesn't matter if the expectation hasn't really taken place yet. By showing the subject that it already has, you will be able to create an alternate reality in the subject's mind, and that alone will grant you immense personal power over your subject. You will not only be the pack leader, but you will also be seen as a source of truth, even if the truth is only backed up by your own words. Anyone can see how powerful this technique can be, especially if you have to convince a large group of people that your perspective is more desirable than the existing view of an issue. Again, it is irrelevant if the expectation has taken place or not. What matters is that you will be able to create the perfect mental state in your subject that will erode all resistance. It is interesting to note that this technique can be used for a variety of purposes, not just for serious situations. For example, let's say you want to go out on a date with someone. The logical first step would be to show that you are a pleasant fellow and you're fun to be with. After showing the subject that you are someone that he or she can trust, you can then begin creating an expectation. You can say something like, "I enjoy dining out after a good movie. It really relaxes me and really brings out my fun side. How about you? What do you enjoy doing after work?" There are several lines of expression working here all at once, but the final outcome is the same. You are creating an expectation in the subject. You are telling the subject that a date is an inevitable occurrence by telling an engaging story. Once the subject is firmly engaged with the idea of having a date, you don't have to do any more drastic measures. You just have to give your subject enough time to fully absorb the expectation, and at the final moment, you can ask the subject to go out on a date with you. At that point in time, the subject would find no reason not to go out with you because all this time you have been building that expectation in the subject's mind. When you finally succeed in getting what you want from the interaction, you can then close the interaction with yet another expectation, perhaps another date, or even more. The point here is that you can continue using this strategy to influence the same person over and over again. Your success will depend on the following factors: how well you establish rapport with your subject, how vivid and real the expectation is, how well you describe the process of that expectation coming true, how expertly you handle the feedback of your subject to sustain the hypnotic illusion that what you are saying is undeniably true and will take place immediately because you know it will happen, how well you are able to sustain the theme and the brand of logic or reasoning that you employed at the beginning of your conversation. Now, what should you do in the event that your subject doesn't want to comply with what you want? The easiest solution would be to simply misdirect the person. Misdirection can be accomplished by shifting the issue while getting the subject to agree with what you are saying. For example, if you asked someone out on a date, even if you have just met the person, and the subject refuses to go out on a date with you, you can say, "Were you ever in a situation where you acted out of pure impulse and you actually enjoyed the fruits of your decision?" 10 times out of 10, your subject will say yes to such a question. You can then follow it up with a, "Sometimes it's better to act upon impulse than to dwell endlessly on the what-ifs for years." The point here is that you are misdirecting the subject to bring him back into your own line of reasoning. This slight misdirection is necessary to defeat the subject's own line of reasoning. Reading techniques. When a person says that he wants to read something, he usually refers to a book or some other material with discernible symbols like letters or numbers. The act of reading is usually not associated with people, but this doesn't mean that you cannot apply this principle to conversational hypnosis or human communication in general. Psychics are experts at conducting readings of people because this is how they create the perfect mental state that will allow them to convince their clients or subjects that they are genuine and that they know a thing or two about the future. Again, the focus is not to deceive anyone, but rather to gather the right kind of feedback so that you will be able to persuade people more easily. So the first type of reading that I would like to discuss with you is cold reading. Cold reading works because it keeps the subject interested, and at the same time, you would be able to gain great insights about the subject without him knowing it. The key to cold reading is the statements themselves. The beauty of conversational hypnosis or covert hypnosis is the fact that you can use unusual language patterns that are not easily detectable or discernible by common folk. The outcome is quite impressive. You will be able to gather information without appearing that you are trying to determine what makes your subject tick. Here is a sample dialogue that utilizes cold reading. Person A. I see that you are a happy person. You seem to be content about a lot of things in your life. Not all, but a significant portion of your life brings you happiness, does it not? Person B. Yes, I'm happy right now, but there are some things in my life that are causing a lot of distress. Person A. I thought about that, which is why I said that not everything in your life is causing happiness. Do you feel happy about your relationships? Person B. Yes, because I am in a very equal relationship. Person A. I thought so, which is why you appear confident about yourself. And I also see that you are a person with strong willpower. And the dialogue goes on. What did you notice about the dialogue? First of all, the first person actually appears to know absolutely nothing about the second person. But after a few exchanges, the first person was able to plot a definite map of the subject's current mindset and life situation. As the first person affirms his knowledge of the subject, the second person becomes even more engrossed in the fact that the first subject is asking the right questions and he has all the right ideas. Eventually, the second person starts believing everything that the first person is saying. At this point in time, the cold reading is judged as successful. To perform a cold reading, you will only need to remember three steps. Step number one is to make a general observation about your subject. Step number two is to receive and evaluate the feedback of your subject. If the subject agrees with your general statement, you can follow up with another statement supporting your first statement. If the subject neither agrees nor disagrees with your generalized statement, relate another general observation. If the feedback of your subject is negative, create another generalized statement, but this time shift the topic just a little. The third step is to continue creating statements that will gain a positive feedback from the subject. If you ever receive either a neutral or negative feedback, simply relay a generalized statement once again to renew the process. The beautiful thing about cold reading is that you can use it to gain actual, verifiable insight and information about people without getting caught. It's not so much that you are doing something illegal or evil when you perform a cold reading, but you would come across as someone with incredible mind-reading abilities if you gain insight from others using this particular technique. Cold reading also allows conversational hypnotists to appear competent and extremely knowledgeable. For example, if you performed a cold reading on a client who might be interested in buying something from you, you can actually learn what the client needs without him realizing that he is actually feeding you the right information. Cold reading, if done properly, can be used on almost anyone as long as you keep it simple and direct. To ensure that you will always get the best outcomes when performing a cold reading, here are some additional guidelines. First, practice making general statements that have at least two components that your subject can either agree or disagree with. These statements must be relayed in such a way that you can easily say, "Yes, I thought so," or "No, I didn't think so." Why must there be components in a single statement? Well, there will be times when some of your general observations will be way off course. Using multiple components or observations in a single statement will reduce the incidence of being completely wrong, so that you can sustain the illusion that you do know a lot about your subject. Second, before making a general statement about anything, it is important to identify your goals during the cold reading. What do you want to find out about your subject? What type of insight do you want your subject to reveal? Identify these goals within the interaction and create a theme so that your subject will be primed or preconditioned to answer a specific line of questions from you. If your subject is primed to answer a specific line of questions, the incidence of resistance will be reduced greatly. Third, feedback is extremely important to cold reading sessions. If you don't pay attention to the subtle feedbacks of your subject, you will get lost during the cold reading. Pay attention to both verbal feedback and nonverbal feedback to see how well you are doing. If you keep getting neutral or negative feedback from your subject, it just means that you haven't hit upon that general topic that will give you full access to the subject's vital insights. Just keep making those generalized statements until the subject gives you a positive feedback or answer. That is all that matters during a cold reading. Positive feedback. 4. What should you do if you know absolutely nothing about your subject? Work with what is in front of you. Observe how he talks and holds himself during a conversation. You might be surprised how much you can learn by just closely observing a person. People are usually unaware that they are sending very fine signals to the outside world through their speech and body language. As a conversational hypnotist, it is your job to identify these fine signals so you can use them during a cold reading. The second type of reading that I would like to discuss with you is warm reading. Warm reading, in contrast to cold reading, does not really endeavor to discover any important insight. When you perform a warm reading of another person, you will simply be focusing on relating general statements that apply to the majority of the general population. Marketers, salespeople, and other similar professionals are experts at warm reading. This type of reading might sound mundane and careless, but effective warm reading requires immense skill because people can still say no to any kind of reading. When people start making a lot of negative feedbacks to your general statements, they will begin to think that you don't really know what you are doing, and this can greatly reduce your ability to influence your subject. Can a warm reading be performed after a cold reading? Yes. A cold reading is recommended to establish the coordinates so you would know what direction to pursue. Once you have a good idea of what makes your subject tick, that would be the time to relate general statements to really hook in your subject. For example, if you want to sell something to a potential client, you can perform a cold reading first to find out why he is interested in your general line of products. Once you find out what he's really after, you can start performing a warm reading. A warm reading can be fashioned in such a way that the subject will agree with everything that you say. This effectively creates an agreement frame that is fairly difficult to get out of, especially if the subject has agreed with you a few times already. Here's an example of a warm reading. I feel that, as a business person, you value your time more than anything else, and because of this, you want affordable tools and solutions that can be deployed effortlessly at any time. You also want solutions that are not complicated and can easily be renewed or even upgraded when the time comes. I also feel that you are the kind of business person who will not sacrifice quality for price because you know that in the long run, quality pays for itself 10 times over. The last kind of reading that I would like to share with you is hot reading. Hot reading is actually a type of reading that requires prior information about the subject in order to work. So if you want to really impress your subject, you need to start digging, and you need to find out more about your subject. Instead of trying to get a positive feedback with your general statements, all your statements, general or specific, during a hot reading will be centered on actual facts and insights that you have already gotten before the dialogue or conversation. The key to a successful hot reading is accuracy and consistency. Don't mix facts with fiction and always be selective about the kind of insight that you are going to share with your subject. Creating and sustaining personal power. The concept of personal power is often underemphasized in the field of hypnosis because authors and experts tend to become overly focused on the linguistic techniques. Linguistic techniques are important, but if the hypnotist does not have full confidence in his ability to gain compliance through hypnotic techniques, he will not fare very well. Other experts will simply say, "You can do it, we did it, and so can you." Well, encouragements are fine. They are the cornerstone of education, and they make students feel good about themselves because they know they are fully supported by their mentors. I would like to do more than just encourage you. I would like to do more than just say, "You can do it." I know you can do it, but from my experience, deep down, many hypnotists feel that they need something more before they can start practicing hypnosis full time. They need to develop their personal power. They need to experience how to raise their status on their own whenever they need to. And that is what I'm going to show you in this section of the book. Tactic number one. As I've mentioned in the introduction to this section, the foremost problem that many hypnotists have is personal power. Personal power is defined as a person's current influence over other people, which resides within the person, and is not vested by any position that he or she has. So from this definition alone, you can probably think of individuals you have already met in your lifetime that seem to have a lot of clout or a lot of influence over other people, even if they weren't particularly rich or smart. You don't need to be a rich CEO of a multi-billion-dollar business to have personal power. It doesn't work that way. Many people think this way because obviously wealth has its benefits. It bestows power on people because they can manipulate a lot of things by using their wealth. But in the final analysis, the people who hold the most personal power are rarely the wealthiest individuals. They are the people who know how to use their own personal power to their advantage whenever they need to accomplish something. If you are ready to wield your own personal power over others, then let me share with you the first power tactic that should never be left out by a hypnotist, especially if he is in the presence of known power players. The first tactic revolves around becoming an authority and bestowing a high status upon yourself. Now, I know that these concepts have a generally negative connotation. When people hear the word authority, they usually think of things like a dictatorial government or despotic and brutal leaders. When high status is heard, people often visualize boastful and generally undesirable individuals. If you think this way too, I don't blame you at all for having these misconceptions. Popular culture and the media have been tirelessly propagating these stereotypes for the past few decades, and people generally don't look beyond these popular conceptions of what a leader is really like or what genuine authority might be like. Because people generally have a lot of misconceptions about being an authority on something, you need to start unlearning these ideas. Why? First, they won't help in building your self-confidence as a hypnotist. Second, they won't help you increase your personal power or your influence over other people. Other than being popular ideas, we have no use for these misconceptions. So the best way to deal with them is to simply discard them and replace them with new ideas. New ideas that will help you achieve what you want in life. That is what true personal power is all about. Now, the first thing that you have to know about social status and authority is that these are merely roles that people play in society. People respond differently to what kind of role you are playing during social interactions. Some people are routinely perceived as having a low social status, and they are treated by people according to their projected status. Inversely, some individuals project a high social status, and they are treated accordingly by their peers. Both low and high social statuses have their uses in the field of hypnosis. Sometimes you would have to lower your social status to make the other person more comfortable talking to you. Other times, a high social status is needed to ensure that those around you will take you seriously and will really listen to what you have to say. For example, if you have to talk to a new staff member who is struggling with his responsibilities in the office, lowering your social status would allow this staff member to connect with you more effectively, since he will not feel intimidated by your position in his place of employment. A high social status would be necessary if you need to take control of a situation. Here's a good example. Imagine a young businesswoman giving a presentation to a group of senior male entrepreneurs and investors. There is a lot of gender politics involved in this kind of situation, because no matter how hard people try to suppress stereotypes and discriminatory ideas, they come to the fore because these ideas are part of culture, and people share culture whether they like it or not. If the young businesswoman does not appear to be an authority as she speaks to her predominantly male audience, she will not be able to impress people, and her audience will probably attack her presentation. But if she expands her personal power by acting out a higher social status, her detractors would have no reason but to respond to the social status that is being projected to them at that precise moment in time. You must remember that no matter how much society will try to equalize the playing field in all industries, fields, and intellectual disciplines, people will always feel the need for structure and hierarchy. People will always mentally place themselves and those around them in a hierarchy. So even if there are no formal statuses or roles, there will be an unsaid code and structure involved within large and small groups of people. With this being said, Your edge right now as a hypnotist is you are aware of the nature of personal power, and you now know that it can be altered to suit your needs. This is a very important facet of status and personal power. They can be changed depending on the situation. And you must be flexible, because if you do not adapt to the needs of your situation, you will eventually suffer from failure because of poor communication and a lack of favorable responses from your subject. Here's an example. Let's say your responsibility was to sell home care products to people. Sometimes people like being led, so it is perfectly logical to project an authoritative status because in doing so, you will appear competent and knowledgeable about the products that you are selling. Other times, customers just want to feel relaxed when they are looking over the products that you are selling. In such a situation, you will need to modify the status you are projecting. Again, these are roles that you can use and discard at will. Never think that you are stuck with just one role or status your whole life. That has never been true, and if that has been holding you back for the longest time, it's time to change your view of status and personal power. Now, how can a person actually change the social status that he is projecting to others? How can a shift in an individual's personal power occur through the modification of his social status? These are the questions that we will be answering at length in the succeeding sections.